You're listening to Dig Deep on Northern Community Radio. Chuck Marone is our conservative commentator from Strong Towns. Aaron Brown, our liberal commentator from Minnesota Brown. We continue the conversation on health care. Is health care a right as an American? Lou.
Yes. Yes, it is. And I take that position with the question, is education a right? Is access to food and clean water a right? And yes, there are nuanced answers perhaps in terms of, you know, who pays for it and how it's delivered and what's fair and what's right and what's the right of the individual versus the group. But essentially, in we are a society. We are a society of human beings. And in a society, for the health of the human race, we have to think about healthcare as a right, equal access to the ability to take care of yourself and take care of your family.
I think there's two domains here, and I want to separate them because I think intertwining them really confuses the conversation. I'm a Catholic. I think I can speak as a not very good Catholic, but someone who's trying, and say, like, I do think that we have a moral obligation to help each other. I do think that, you know, a Christian view of the world says that, you know, yes, people have a right to be, to compassion and to love and for us to help them and make sure that in a society as ridiculously affluent as ours, that nobody goes without. I think that that is actually the teachings that I aspire to. Now, let's separate that from a government right or a right that we have essentially enshrined all of us together, that we have, in a sense, social contract to fulfill. And I think that's where this conversation gets difficult because, I mean, clearly you have a right to an attorney. That's in the Constitution. You have a right to assemble. You have a right to freedom of speech. There are all these things that essentially we have contractually agreed are rights that are a base bedrock of our society. Does healthcare fall into that? I think that when conservatives hear left-thinking people stand up and say, well, healthcare is a right, what they see is like an open checkbook, like an endless, okay, every single thing that you would ever dream of being healthcare, you have like a moral obligation to do. And as a corollary to that, there's no personal responsibility in that at all. If someone is poor, you feed them. If someone is sick, you help them, period, regardless of how they got to that or their own choices that have put them in that situation. I think that that is where the debate kind of ends, because I think those are two different moral paradigms that are really, really hard to bridge. So I don't stand here and say that, you know, from a functional standpoint in this country, that we can look at healthcare as a right. I think we need to look at it as food, as, you know, clothing and shelter, and say, how in our system can we provide this in the most equitable way possible? Because as an affluent society, everyone should have access to healthcare.
And I don't even think I disagree with the idea that there's no one way you have to do it. If it's a moral responsibility, if as the moral leaders of the country, the people elected by the people, want to disagree about the manner of delivery or the manner of supporting a system that does deliver the care, so be it. That's our democratic system. But I think the question of whether or not it's a right, well, it's a moral responsibility as a human being. And there might be those who disagree with that, you know, a staunch individualist, Ayn Rand proponent might say, no, it is up to the individual to decide whether or not they seek care for their problems or help others. It's their choice. And I understand that that's a philosophy that exists. But as a people, I think widely, people do believe that if they get cancer, that they should get care for that, or that their family member or their child should get care for that. And if you tell them that that's not true, it's a moral outrage. And so that being the case, I just see this as we should be engineering this, you know, the future of this with the idea that we should get a pathway to care for everybody who needs it.
Let me give this conundrum some kind of concrete example. Because if we go back in time and we look at when life was simpler, you know, brutish and short. And these decisions over, like, who should receive what treatment was really more about, you know, do we apply a cold washcloth to their head or not? So I get that, like, there was a time when nuns provided compassionate healthcare service, and it was really like, how do we just make you comfortable? So I you know, in a simpler time, that was an easy kind of moral approach to make. Today, if someone gets cancer, should they get treatment? Yeah, I mean, I feel like they should. Is someone who smoked all their life get the same treatment as a child who, you know, accidentally, you know, who gets leukemia from absolutely like no choice of their own? Well, yeah. I mean, I guess the compassionate part of me says yes. But if it's like an either or if there's like a, or if you're making me sacrifice other things, other social goods, I think it becomes a more complicating question. And this is really where, you know, I think European countries have done a good job in having a conversation about to what extent will we go. And when we have that conversation in this country, we get into, you know, the rhetorical death panels and all this. And we can't have that conversation here because we don't, as a culture, know any limits. So essentially, healthcare as a right means if you are someone who drinks themselves to where you have to have a new liver, and you're number one on the waiting list because you've been in line long enough, you get the new liver. If you're the Mother Teresa figure who has helped the poor all their life and now needs a new liver, you're going to wait in line behind the person who drank their liver sick. I think in a different time when healthcare was closer to us and there was an essentially like the societal moral feedback of, boy, I don't think Aaron should get it. I think Heidi should get it because of...
Well, when a single doctor or a small group of doctors in a town were making those decisions, you had a more direct
relationship. You did. You had a little bit of, if you want to just call it social pressure, mm-hmm. to essentially... I mean, I think the moral equivalent today or the modern equivalent is, should we be giving expensive cholesterol drugs to people who should really be out exercising and changing their diet? I don't have an answer for that, and I'm not going to say that there's an absolute right answer, but I think a society that is incapable of struggling with that is going to have a real hard time doing a national scale healthcare plan where it's a moral right for everybody to have.
That's our conservative commentator from Strong Towns, Chuck Marone. It's Dig Deep on healthcare. Can we as a nation have conversations or create reform where healthcare is concerned? Our liberal commentator from Minnesota Brown, Aaron Brown, continues now.
I think this is where the differences between systems that started, you know, around World War II start to show. Because when you start a national system, as they did, for instance, in Great Britain after the war, the questions that follow as this thing is reformed by different governments, you know, conservative and labor governments have pitched reforms each time they take office in the United Kingdom. And it becomes around the idea of everybody gets access to service. Question is some of these questions you're talking about. Where are the limits? How can we improve efficiency? How can we improve care? And it becomes a question of how do we deliver this stuff? In America, we created a system that was centered around the American problem, which is class, which is access to money, and who's got the good jobs and who has the crappy jobs. And as a result, it's always just a little bit more than half of the country is doing well enough that they would never want to really change anything, really. And so as a result, our questions always became more defensive about reforms. And I include all sides on this, because any kind of change...
I got this. I like it.
Yeah.
I'm not, whatever you do as a reform has to keep giving me everything that I'm getting now.
Yeah.
But just give other people more and not cost me anymore.
Just taking myself as a personal example, I'm a state of Minnesota employee. I teach and I have a really good health insurance plan, I think, compared to a lot of my peers. I just feel like it's good. And I like health reform. I like the idea of changing things. But if you were to tell me, I think I could be persuaded to give up my plan for a broader plan if it made sense to me. But boy, is that going to be true of every cat who has what I have? No way. No way. And if I thought for a second it wasn't going to be good for my family, I mean, just think, that's how people think. And that's how anyone would think if you had what's good. Now, that leaves a lot of people without who would really like in on some of this good stuff. But they're the most expensive in a lot of ways. They're the ones who don't have access to preventative care, who have in lower income environments where there's health problems that come up just through quality of life. You got all kinds of problems in delivering just new care. And that's where a lot of this kind of moral judgment, I think, comes in, where these questions of, you see it in a lot of policies floated. It's like, those people who don't have, they aren't worthy, or they might be doing things that put them in that place. And so we see a lot of that come out as a result of the big dichotomy, the big divide that exists in this country between those who, whether, and I'm not talking just liberal conservative, but just those who are part of the system that's working, so to speak. It's bankrupting itself, of course, over time, but to our appearances, it looks all right. And then everybody else who has to go into the doctor to urgent care. I took my son in, we thought he had the flu, and I got good insurance, and they didn't enter my insurance right. So we got a bill. Now it's getting fixed. I don't actually have to pay this. But this little visit to see if he had the flu cost almost $400. Now, I could probably afford that. But if I made less money than I do, and I didn't have health insurance, that would be a catastrophic blow. That would blow out a month's income trying to keep up with that.
And you have three kids. So
and I have three kids.
And,
what if it wasn't the flu thing? What if it's not the flu? What if it's something just a little more serious, a broken leg or something like that, that happens to kids? So you see this kind of thing happening, and it sinks some people, and other people are in this bubble where it's basically pretty good. Maybe you got copays, maybe you got problems, you got to pay out of pocket for a few things, but you have no idea what it costs and who's making money off it.
But that's what I get very confused by, is who's making money off of this, about the healthcare companies and prescription drug companies. And because so far it's been about, you've been talking about government and class, but not in the sense of corporations, if that makes sense. And
I think the short answer is everybody and nobody. I mean, right. Anytime you have a system that's this big and this complicated, it's very easy to set yourself up as the coral in the flow of money, and siphon off a tiny bit and make a lot of money.
It's being digested by many organs.
Yeah, exactly. So is anybody, like, can you point to one person that is like the source of graft who is making out huge? No, everybody just makes a little bit off of everything. And that's why you have a routine doctor visit costs $400.
And I think you see a dance between insurance companies and healthcare providers. Just like the dance between, I would say there's this, on the North Korea and South Korean border, no, it's the India-Pakistan border. They do these, I remember seeing a video of this, these changing of the guards of the border patrols, and they're these elaborate, like really intimidating things where they will try to like scare the other person. It's all for show. It's all to show that we have problems on our border, but we can't fight a war, so we're going to do these showing of force and very aggressive looking positioning. It's like that between the insurance companies and the hospitals and healthcare providers. And I can just speak from my family history. My parents ran a little company, wheelchair transportation. They'd move people to their doctor's appointments, things like that. And it was people with insurance, people with Medicare and government or Medicaid, and then it was private people who had none of that. And the cost structure was this. Medicaid kept costs real low by having very low reimbursement rates. The problem was it was cost for us. They were losers. Every one of those, we took them, but they didn't make much money for my parents. The insurance ones were better. The insurance companies reimbursed at a higher rate, which was very good, but they definitely, insurance companies also gave you the most grief about paying. Then there was the privates who we had to charge the most. My parents charged them the most because they had nowhere to go. And so that's what's happening in our healthcare system. That's just a little example of my family's little company. It's happening everywhere. If you are on Medicare, you get one kind of treatment because everybody knows Medicare, what it is. They have whole systems for billing Medicare, and it's all prescribed by system. And then there's the battle of the insurance system, where insurance companies are trying to stop the hospitals from charging too much. The hospitals are trying to charge more because they think they can and they need to compensate for the losses on the Medicare. So it's like a dance that everybody's trying to improve their bottom line. They're all publicly traded. They all need to make money for their stockholders, and it continues. And so that's where we are today.
I do think too, even more so than the class issue, I think we just have this cultural problem from our affluence that we're not really able to talk about. And I'll point to the death panel conversation. If we go to a healthcare is a human right, it's going to be provided by government. If we went like full Monty that approach, what you see other countries having to do is actually make a decision between, okay, is it right to spend $500,000 at the end of life for someone in the last 6 weeks of their life? Or is it better to spend $500,000 on pre-kindergarten education and prenatal healthcare for hundreds of kids? And that is, for a country that's used to having it all, in a sense, or being able to ignore the things that we don't, you know, that some people don't have because everyone around us does, but, you know, those people over there don't, but we don't have to deal with them every day, so we can pretend that's not there. For a country that has been able to live like that for generations, we really can't fathom the idea of having to make that choice. That choice is such an impediment to our conversation that anytime anyone starts to talk seriously about reform, we get stuck with that. Mm-hmm. I'm not here saying that there's a clear answer. I'm not saying, you know, kick the elderly person out and let them die 6 weeks earlier. I'm not saying, you know, don't fund pre-kindergarten education for kids. But I'm saying that in a government system, we can't pretend that we'll just keep taxing everybody and spend more. There is an end to that. And at some point, you have to make a decision between priorities. And when government does healthcare, it's government making that decision.
What I always struggle with is this is always part of the debate about any kind of government-run plan. You know, are we going to be able to have these conversations about scarce resources? We can't do it all. Death panels, the risk of them, and the dangers they would pose. When, in fact, we have death panels. They're sitting in the upper echelon of Blue Cross Blue Shield or in your HMOs, and they're making decisions that are akin to that, akin to those kinds of limitation choices. Here's what we can afford. Here's what we can't afford. And we have absolutely no knowledge of those conversations. We don't really know how those decisions are made and if they're made with the system or the people in mind, or if they're made with, you know, we need to clear this to make our stock goals, and we don't know. But as Americans, and this is just, I think, like you said, a cultural thing, we tend to trust that the private industry knows what it's doing and that the system will work out because there's, you know, this soft hand of capitalism that'll somehow guide us to the promised land. When, in fact, when in the messy business of democracy, with all its disagreement, we could actually know where those limits are. And in fact, other countries have been having those very conversations since World War II. We haven't. We've been having conversations about, you know, whether or not the new job we got has health insurance, and that'll take care of us if it does. And so we got kind of fat and happy, maybe, literally fat and literally happy. over the years, and now we're kind of seeing what happens when that is run amok. We're spending so much money, and a lot of it's going to things that are not direct care to people.
The death panel today is, you know, in an America that is increasingly sclerotic economically and has much less upward growth potential, the death panel is really what family you're born into. I mean, that has more to say about your health outcomes than anything else.
That's exactly right.
In our next installment, Dig Deep, we'll take up healthcare reform.